And we're saying hello here at Get Ready to Rock to somebody whose music we've admired for many years now, and that's Rob Reed, best known for his work with the band Magenta. Hello, Rob.
Hi there.
Nice to talk to you. And we're talking ahead of the inaugural Celebrate Prog event taking place the 7th, 8th of July in the Hippodrome, which is Kingston upon Thames, and it's a rare appearance for Magenta. So you must be looking forward to that now, Rob.
I think it's going to be a great weekend. I think it's a stellar lineup. It's the sort of cream of the current prog rock circuit, really. And so we're in good company. And we don't do that many shows, really, as Magenta. So it's always good to get out and play.
Do you find it all comes together fairly easily for your live appearances? Because you are right, that was a question I was going to ask you, actually. You make very rare and much appreciated appearances, but does that mean then that you have to really work hard before each event?
I wish we did, and I wish we worked a little harder, but we're a band of very few rehearsals, really. Yeah, it's a tricky one, but you know, there's not that many places to play, to be honest. That's part of the problem these days, really, with prog rock. You know, there's a loyal following, but it's not mainstream by a long way, really. Even though it seems to be gathering a bit of pace of late, but there are only sort of so many places to play, I think, and you've got to be careful you don't overplay places and things. But it's finding the time with everyone's busy schedules to get the band together, really. And we've undergone a lot of sort of personnel changes over the years, and sometimes that can knock it a little bit because you've got to go back and rehearse with new players and things. But we seem to be with a steady lineup now. I think it's the best lineup we've had, really. So yeah, we're looking forward to playing and showcasing, you know, the new lineup.
Excellent. Now, you've been building a steady following over the years with Magenta, and you've gathered great respect amongst prog rock fans. And you can also hear the influences now on other more recent bands, really, i.e. in the last 5 or 6 years, as opposed to, you know, the last 10 or 11. I might mention, for instance, Panic Room obviously springs to mind, but there's also Carnatica, The Reasoning. You've almost sort of touched on the almost the part of the answer to the question. I mean, why do you think the band has remained quite precious to your fans over the years, but you haven't achieved that wider recognition?
Oh, it's such a tricky one. And when we sort of started out, you know, I think one of the things that set us apart was the fact we had a female singer. And, you know, going back sort of 10, 11 years when we started, there were very, very few prog rock bands, especially with female singers. So we sort of stood out then. And another strength, I would say, of the band is that I come from a sort of real songwriting point of view, and a pop background as well. So the band was always heavily on the sort of songwriting and the hooks and things. So I think, and I'm a real sort of obsessed with getting, you know, a good vocalist, I think, as well. And especially in prog, I think you find that the vocalist is almost like an afterthought, really, in prog, where, you know, a lot of people concentrate on the sort of whittle and the technical side and how loud and how fast the guitars and keyboards and drums and how tricky the time signatures are. For me, it's always about the song and the singer being a good singer, and I think that's the strength in Magenta, and I think that what sort of made us stand out a little bit, you know, and people really bought into that. And I say, and of late there seems to be a deluge of bands with female singers. it's quite weird now, really, but it seems to be the sort of vogue thing, really. But and as far as, you know, getting to a wider audience, I think, as I said, the prog thing, prog rock thing, is such a typical thing to cross over into the mainstream. And, you know, I think a lot of people look at bands like Porcupine Tree and Dream Theater and think, oh, you know, if we sort of change our sound into that kind of whatever, we'll achieve that sort of level of success. And people sort of end up chasing their tails and changing what they do, adding you know, a bit of heavier guitars and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, we've sort of tried it in the past, but we all come back to our prog roots, really. And you know, I make the music I enjoy, and if people buy it and like it, great. If they don't, tough, really. So, you know, I'm happy with the way it's going, and, you know, and it is still growing, and we're always finding people. You know, the problem is getting people to actually know the band around. The amount of times we turn up at places and play to new audiences, like these festivals, and people say, oh, we didn't even know Magenta existed, you know. And then they go back and buy the back catalogue, and they're ardent fans. So it's, you know, that's another, you know, another reason why these festivals where you're playing to new audiences are great for us.
I mean, I think what you're saying, Rob, is you've really remained, in all this time that you've been working as Magenta, you've remained truthful to your original ideals, haven't you?
Yeah.
I mean, is pigeonholing a problem for the band, really? Because you've been long, I was thinking about this actually before the interview, you've been long classed in the prog rock bracket, but a lot of your material is actually quite accessible and commercial.
Oh, it's hugely.
Yeah, and if people want to steer towards a particular album, the singles compilation is evidence of that. Pigeonholing isn't always helpful, is it?
Well, I think it's really weird. I think it's you are where you are, and the music, you know, across the sort of five albums we've made now, they're each completely different, really, to be honest, you know, and but they are, like, basically pop songs dressed up as prog, really. Do you mean with the bits which I really like from the influences of Genesis and Yes? That's what I'll bring in. And but you know, a 20-minute song for us is like five songs sewn together, basically five pop songs sewn together with all the frills put around it, really. And that's the way I look at it. And it's no different to writing. But as I said, it all goes back to the melodies and stuff. And I think, you know, that's what people, I think, buy. You know, even if it's subconsciously, that's what people are getting into. Is that if you haven't got a good song, you know, bands like Genesis and Yes, it was always the songs, really. You know, they had great songs. If you listen to sort of Genesis, there's little bits of whittle, but not much, really. There's some great songs. There was always the Mellies and Pink Floyd, the sort of real stellar prog bands that we sort of class as prog, were great songwriters. And I think a lot of bands these days forget about that and are too interested on the whittle and the intricacies and forgetting about, you know, you've got to be able to play these songs at the piano, really.
Yes. Well, let's have one of those very accessible tracks. It appears on your album, which came out several years back, in fact, and it's a great starting place for any new listener to the band, back in 2007. The singles collection, when you revisited some of your earlier pieces, and this is the track Broken.
Could have the choice to feel the warmth of love again forever.
Now, we've talked a little bit about the festival and live appearances. You don't do that many, Rob. Is that a conscious decision, or really, it's as you said earlier, the, a lack of the right opportunity?
Yeah, you know, and it is just tough trying to find. You've got to balance it, cause, you know, we could go out and play a massive tour and go and do loads of gigs, but you know, if you spread it too thin, you might you're not going to get the audiences to fill the places, really. You know, that this is the thing, and you've got to look at the cost and stuff, you know, and it does cost to do these shows and to get everyone there and all this kind of stuff, and unfortunately, you know, it's tough to do, to be in a prog band and for that to be your living, really. And again, you know, I'm the only one in the band that does music full time for a living, and I think there's very few prog bands where members can just do the band full time. They've all got day jobs and stuff, so you know, if people are working, you can't just go out, and you've got to be careful when if you go abroad and stuff. If people are working, you know, Monday to Friday, then you can't go on a Friday. And it's all these little things which sort of take the glamour off the bands. You know, you think of these bands, but 95% of the bands, prog bands these days, are all under the same constraints, really. You know, unless you've got a rich benefactor, you know, you've got to earn a living and try and balance that and find the time to make the albums and go and do the shows, really. But when we do play, that we're all sort of fired up and we put on a great show then, you know. And going back 10 years, it was like the bulk of the prog bands were all like shoegazers, all looking at their shows doing these 20-minute guitar solos and things, where because the members of Magenta, again, I'm the only one that comes from a prog background. Like Tina, the singer, comes from a punk background and didn't know prog at all. And, you know, and so she comes into it sort of with this sort of view of when you perform, you do perform, you just don't look at your feet and you listen to the music. She jumps around, sings and sells, and the whole band give a performance. So that, again, was something different to the sort of normal view of like five people sitting on chairs and into the music or whatever. We actually performed a show, so, you know, that worked for us.
Well, we should say to listeners that they should savour these rare appearances of the band. You've always been your own masters, going back to another theme we've talked about. And I noticed that with your recent release, or the current album as we speak, Rob, Chameleon, you offered bonus material for fans. Is that still continuing through the Chameleon membership?
Yeah, it is. You know, that was something. Because you're sort of on a constant battle of between sort of the download sort of scandal where you're being done over by the free people ripping your album, selling for, you know, for whatever, and then you're up against the sort of streaming of music as well with Spotify and things, which you're giving away music and all this kind of stuff. You've got to find a way of attracting people and giving them extra value and things, really, and the sort of Chameleon project, which we run alongside the release of the album, was something that I sort of discussed. I mean, it was actually an idea that Jem from Frost, meaning we were sort of discussing this, how to sort of try a new sort of model of releasing an album, of releasing a track a month for like 4 or 5 months prior to the album, to give people a chance to hear the album grow. Give the tracks a lot more listening time as opposed to like 12 tracks arriving on your desk in one go. And say what we did with this, you could join this sort of like a fan sort of site where you'd be given a password or whatever, and you could log in, and then we would release instrumental versions, demo mixes. We actually released the multi-track so people could remix the tracks, and we had videos making of. So people were alongside us on the last sort of 6 months of the album. A lot of people bought into it. It's still available now, but we'll be closing it down now because onto the next album, really. But it was very successful, and people enjoyed that sort of being part of it. And it's, again, it was one, it's something that stood out from the crowd and, you know, got people talking.
So fans and listeners should watch out for the next development of that, really, with the next album. Sounds a great idea as well. Well, we're going to talk a little bit about the early days of the band, and we're going to start off right back at the beginning, really, with the album Revolutions, 2001, and this is the track The White Witch.
Your children day and night, making us grow, making us whole with your love. Mother of all and the bringer of life, protect your children day and night, making us grow.
Now tell us, Rob, a little bit more about Magenta in the early days. I think you mentioned the band. Tripper was the band that you had with vocalist Christina Booth. And of course, your association with prog rock in general goes back to the band Cyan, I think, in the late 80s.
Yeah.
So was Tripper really the catalyst for Magenta?
It was, but in a weird way, because... you know, as I said, I did like three albums with Cyan back in the 80s and 90s, whatever, you know. So I've always been involved in it, but it's always been sort of sidelined for me, whereas my main sort of musical thrust for about 10 years with Tina was doing this sort of the pop, wanting to be a pop star and, you know, wanting to get a huge record deal and all this kind of stuff. And And the band we were in called Tripper, it was me and Tina, it was like a sort of Eurythmics kind of lineup, but I would be all the music and Tina singing. And we did that, but it was sort of, it was such a sort of traumatic experience, shall I say, of the ups and downs and the sort of ruthlessness of record companies and managements and all this kind of stuff, and the demoralizing side of it. I'm sort of, I remember the last couple of days where we had, you know, big meetings with all the heads of all the major record companies, and it was like, you see, it weren't going to happen, and for the most ridiculous reasons and stuff. That we were in the lift coming down from one of these, I think it was from MCA or whatever it was, and Tina said, "That's it, I'm not doing this anymore, I'm not doing pop anymore, that's, I've had enough, it's destroying us," sort of thing. Like, and I said, "Right, fair enough." And then I thought, right, we had a couple of months, and I thought, well, you know, what am I going to do now? And I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if we could do a prog band? And it was at the time as well, a lot of people were scared of calling themselves prog bands. They were like, oh, you know, we're anything but prog bands. And I thought, well, what if we were to make a prog band? And we would really wear our hearts on our sleeves, and prog with a capital P, and I made it a double album, four 25-minute songs, a total concept album, completely sort of self-indulgent prog. So I have all the ingredients I wanted in a prog album. And with Tina singing it, because I knew she was a great singer, and again looked at, thought there was no female singer at the time, and we did that, and I had no idea if people would like it, hate it, or slag it off or whatever, but it came out and people really got behind it, and to my surprise sort of, really. And I knew it was good stuff, but I didn't know if people would actually buy into it, and people actually admired the fact that we were prepared to say this is prog and not ashamed of it at all, really. And you know, even in the sleeve note, I remember putting a little disclaimer to say that, you know, you might, some of this might sound familiar, but at the time bands like Genesis and Yes were pop bands, and nobody was making this sort of real prog music. So I thought, and that worked as well. But and then it all took off really from there, and we were asked to do a show in where it was Mexico, I think it was one of our first shows, on the back of the album. And again, the album was never meant to be played live. I thought, how the hell am I going to do this? Because I've made this huge album. But we did it. We got a band in, put a band together, and yeah, and it took off.
Incredible. I mean, I think that's the, if there's a USP in the early days, it was, of course, the female-fronted band. I do recall also your sleeve note saying that, you know, you didn't think there was much, you know, at that time, we're talking about the beginning of this decade, really, that, you know, there was a lack of decent prog, and, you know, some of those big names weren't actually playing their early stuff, were they? No.
No, and I'd say that was the big sort of idea, really, and that's what I was trying to, I thought, if people would you know, wanted this kind of stuff, and, you know, and there were people who were big prog fans, and I think everyone started to disown it at that point, and even the bands of today, really, you know, there was a couple of sort of 80s bands who were all like prog bands, who were saying, oh, we're not prog, you know, and it was scared, it was almost, you were too scared to admit that they were prog, and I just thought, oh, it's madness, you know, you are a prog band, and that's what you are, you know. And again, but it's changed the last couple of years, but a lot of bands, again, think, by disowning and dropping the prog, they can get into the rock market and whatever, and try and sell a few more, and try and mislead people into getting into them, and, you know, but I just fed up all that, especially now, and on the new album as well, that we're working on at the moment, it's a real sort of return to the sort of earlier albums, like Seven, which I think is our best album, and the musical style is a lot back to that, because I just fancy doing a bit more heavy prog, really. Pointless trying to be something you're not for the sake of sort of commercial gain. You're going to come unstuck.
Let's have a track now, Rob, from that album you mentioned, Seven. Came out originally 2004, and this was, I think, another single early on, and it's the track called Anger.
No more tears and pain, life. life so full to end it this way. Can't give up the fight, so I pray. Will you take what is mine, the life that was yours? We will meet in the light, can't take that. Changing boundaries to save. At the end, the race we have run. Not a care of when life is done. Will you take what is mine, the life that was yours? We will meet in the light, can't take that.
Now, we mentioned Cyan. I've some idea that you are playing a gig at some stage over the summer with Cyan. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm really kind of regret it. But no, it's... yeah, well, I say because we did three albums with Cyan back in the day before Magenta, and it was sort of blueprint for Magenta, really. If you look at the album, they're all like a logical sort of as a thread running through them all musically. And I just been playing them, and I've been, and we, a lot of people have been asking me, you know, am I going to re-release them, re-record them, and all this kind of stuff. And I dug them out, and I listened to them. I thought, God, some great stuff on here. I could do with a bit of updating on it. And I've been working with a new male singer doing some other material, and I had him to sing one of the tracks, and I thought, God, this sounds really, really good. You know, this could be, you know, we should do this sort of thing. And about 4 months ago, we did a one-off show with Magenta where we sort of played a lot of older material. It was like an evening with Magenta. Then the first half was like we played some Cyan, we played the Chimpanzee album, which I did, and we played some of Tina's solo album. Chris played some of his solo album. And it had a great response to the Cyan material, so I thought, wow, I've always wanted to do it, sort of for my enjoyment, and because the material is valid, we're going to do a show at Summer's End in October, I think it's the beginning of October. So that's going to be our first one-off, and we'll see how it goes, really, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
So the songs are really taking on a new lease of life, as you mentioned. What about those reissues? Because the likes of the album, I think it's The Creeping Vine, and I'm sure in our collection we've got a track called an album called Echoes. Are there any plans to perhaps bring those out again, either before or maybe as a result of that appearance?
I think so, yeah. You know, I have been sort of tinkering away in the background, especially because we've got this new singer, you know, who's really, really good, and I think I will, most probably, I don't know when, I haven't got a timeline for when it's going to be done, you know. I think we'll do this show, and I think, yeah, I think we're definitely going to re-release it, and it deserves to be, and it gives me opportunity to do something different as well, really, so... Yeah, I think it will happen, but I don't know when. I've got it there, all the multi-track stuff. I found all the parts, and it all there. And we recorded a few bits, new bits with the vocalists and stuff, and it's sounding good. So I think, yeah.
Well, that's very good, and I'm sure fans will be really pleased, especially those who, you know, are finding it difficult to track that down, because it has been deleted for some time now.
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear what we've been missing. A track from the album The Creeping Vine. This is Cyan and Home.
Thank you.
Rob, you've had a parallel career, really, in terms of the songwriting and production, and lots of different projects. We'll talk a little bit about Chimpan A, you mentioned. But do you have a preference for either, you know, recording with a band in your own right or production? I mean, or playing live, for instance. I mean, have you any preference, or do you treat all these aspects equally?
Oh, it's a tricky one. Yeah, you know, I think it's because of the sort of nature of the beast of, because it's my sort of livelihood, you've got to have a lot of, irons in the fire and various things, really. But I think you've got to be careful how you juggle them all. And I do enjoy the studio work more than the live work. I don't mind the sort of 90 minutes while we're on stage. It's okay. It's a bit of a panic, and you're always worried about the technical side and all this kind of stuff. I'm more happy in the studio. I just like to work on various things, and I've always got loads of little projects on the go, and it just keeps things exciting, really. I think the Magenta is the main. That's the thing that everything hangs off, really. You know, that's the long-term goal is Magenta. But there's various other things going on at the moment, I'm working on this huge project I've been working on for the last 3 years, which is about to be unveiled now, which is a real labour of love. It's called Compendium, mid-August, I think people will see it's a stellar cast, big album, it's an epic, so watch this space for that one. So that's been taking the bulk of my time for the last 2.5 years, really.
Oh, gosh. So you're coordinating that, producing?
I am, producing, writing, and arranging it all. So it's a monster. I'm really excited about it, and it's been terrible keeping it all under wraps. And
oh, but now it's finally coming to fruition. And
such a long haul. It's been a brilliant journey, and I can't give too much away, but it's an absolute epic. And again, it's something which I looked at and I thought, well, no one's done this for such a long time. And I know why now as well, because it's been a monster undertaking, but I'm really proud of this work, bit of work, really.
And, Rob, is that another prog rock epic?
It is.
It is. Oh, well, watch this space. And
it's prog, but it's more rock, this one. Again, it's just some great songs. Brilliant singing on it, outrageously good singing, and I've got to work with some of my real heroes, and it's an absolute epic. Without giving too much away, I basically had a wish list or a bucket list of things I wanted to do, people I wanted to work with, where I wanted to go to record, and basically ticked them all off, and it's just monstrous. It's huge. The moment of truth is approaching, because it's all done. We're at the mastering stage of it, and
We'd like to hear more about that. Now, just before we close, Chimpan A, I have to mention this, because they came to my attention, certainly, Rob, via Steve Balsamo when I chatted to him several years back. And he sent me that album, and I have to say, you know, it's one of those, he was very kind, he sent a couple of his solo albums. And it laid on the pile for a while, and I then thought, give that a go. And I have to say, it's a wonderful album. I'm sure you've had that feedback since it was released.
Well, bizarrely, that album actually has got a lot to do with this project, because Steve is actually the lead vocalist on the album.
Ah, right.
Said it there. So, and because I think Steve is one of the best British vocalists, and, you know, it takes a lot to impress me singing-wise, but his singing, not so much on the Stories albums and the sort of that kind of stuff he done, but on his earlier stuff, when you hear him singing when he was in Superstar and things like that, his vocal range is absolutely incredible, and the emotion he can convey and stuff is stunning. So he was on my list of what I wanted involved in this project, and I thought, if I can make a rock album, a prog rock album with him singing, and I knew I'd be onto a winner, really. And he was the sort of cornerstone of this. He was the first one involved, and we did that. But going back to the Chimpan A, that Yes, that album is one of my favourite albums I've ever been involved with, and it almost pains me to play it, because I know that it is such a good album that deserved a lot more exposure. And, you know, I remember when I finished it, I thought, oh, this is really a killer album. It was, you know, it had lots of everything in it. It was electronic, dance music in it, a bit of pop, a bit of prog, a bit of rock. Something really unique, the collection of it. But again, it needed such a massive amount of financial backing to actually get the exposure to the general public. So it sort of pains me. And every time I speak to Steve about the album, we're all like, oh, you know, we can't play it because it makes it depressed almost, because it's such a good album. And everyone, like yourself, I have so many people coming up to me saying this is one of my favourite albums. You know, what's happening with it? Why isn't it, you know, like, on par with a Moby album or something like that, you know? And like, well, you need a bit of luck and a bit of money behind it.
Here's the track from the album Chimpan A, and it's The Secret Wish.
You said the circle can't be broken, the special sign of love unspoken. We share the mark, it looks like Venus. We could remove the space between us if we stepped off the path, we move along. The searching would be gone. With you, I can belong.
I think, Rob, the thing about this is that it's got a great vibe, the album. I think it's the feel of the piece.
Yeah.
And I hear what you say about the promotion aspect, because I think we should explain it came out on a very small label. You'd worked with the label,
yeah,
for some of your earlier releases, but it probably demanded a much bigger label, didn't it?
It did. And, you know, it almost took me back into the mental days of being in the Tripper band, where you have to try and flog yourself to record companies. And we did a few meetings, and people were just like, people couldn't see it, you know. Again, you got to be in the right place at the right time, and you know, if this is going back, you know, 7 or 8 years ago and things, and now, you know, things are a lot more DIY. You can do it yourself, and you can sort of promote it and things. And I still think there's life in the album, and it hasn't dated, which is really good. And you know, I think we great believers that you know that in the end it will come through, and someone will pick it up, be it for an advert or something like that, for a film. Just you need something like that, which can get people to buy into it, because it really lends itself because of the atmosphere of the album, the vibe, as you say. And fingers crossed. But
would it be too much to ask to do a Chimpanzee Part 2? Because that would have the effect, wouldn't it, of interesting people in the original?
Possibly, but again, it was such a mass. We took about 2 years to make that album, and it was a lot of work. And again, it's to get Steve, myself, and there's another guy called Rob Thompson, the three of us together, and again, we had some great people playing on it, and it was such a, you know, we were lucky at that time, and people's schedules and, you know, circumstances, but now, trying to get Steve to come and do anything is a nightmare. It's been a nightmare again to come and sing on this album, this project of mine, because he's so busy doing a million other things, really. So, again, we always say that, you know, we should do another album, and we got 2 really good tracks, which we sort of did, you know, after doing the album. We did another 2 tracks, and then everything came to a grinding halt because of people's circumstances and things. But so we got them sitting on the shelf, so we might, you know, do a special edition or something, and we shot some videos and things. But I don't know whether we could, you know, it was just a magical moment where it all came together.
Exactly, it is wonderful, and I think if listeners, and most people probably won't know that, even if they follow your music with Magenta, I think it's quite obscure, but the moment they hear it, I think they'll love it. So that's definitely one to investigate, Chimpanzee, great album. And I should mention, I think you did refer to it, where you got back together earlier this year and you played some of your sort of wider material, including Cyan. So, intriguingly, Rob, what were you playing from the Chimpanzee album?
We played... What did we play? Well, the problem was, because Steve wasn't there singing, he's pretty hard as act to follow, really, and we played Secret Wish, which we just heard just now, and we played... what did we play? You Moving Me, which is the second track on the album. We played 2 of it, and they were the ones we could get away with without having to rely too much on the vocal gymnastics of Steve Balsamo. But A Secret Wish is always good to play with the tubular bell sample in there.
Well, here's hoping that something comes again in the future, either for the album or some sort of spin-off, maybe. Yeah. Now, just to conclude then, Magenta, Celebrate Prague, that's coming very shortly. And you've mentioned also you're now working on... In fact, you're on the way to the studio as we speak. Holding you up here, Rob. So now we're going to play out with Glitterball from Chameleon. I sensed on the current album... it was a bit more immediate, more accessible, and slightly tougher, I think, really, in terms of your albums. What can we expect from the next one?
Complete opposite. Well, it's weird, because I've sort of said it before, whereas I've been writing for the last 2 years on all the new Magenta material, and I had sort of these two big writing sessions, and the first one sort of came up with all this heavy kind of immediate stuff, which is what you're hearing on Chameleon. Then I had another session where it was like, oh god, I desperately need to write some prog, I needed my prog fix, and I wrote a load of other stuff, and I thought, right, okay, there's my album, but then I thought, oh my god, I got two completely different albums. So hence what we did, I thought, rather than just trying to shoe all of them all together, the Chameleon album was done, and we recorded it in a completely different way. We did it really quickly, you know, and instead of spending like 2 years making an album, it was done over like 3 or 4 months. And I think it sounds like that. It's got a lot more urgency to it. The songs are shorter. But the new album then is my second lot of writing, which is slightly more like the sort of 7 album, which is, I think, if people like the sort of classic prog stuff we did, and that's the album everyone appeal to their sort of big album, which is Seven, and so bestseller and things. It's a lot more like that, you know. Still great songs and stuff, but I just needed to play some prog. So I think that's the new album, really. And yeah, you know, I think it's still going to... It's always going to have this thread and, you know, a sound of Magenta, but I don't like to sort of keep rehashing the same, you know. It'd be easy to make every album exactly the same. I think I'd like to twist it a little bit for each album.
And that's probably the attraction, isn't it? That every one is a little different to the previous. It's a progression in many ways, isn't it? So we look forward to that, the next album. I mean, I would imagine that'll be sometime next year now, the release.
Yeah, I think it'll be early next year. I think the bulk of the, well, all the writing and sort of arrangements are done, and I've just recorded the drums for it, and we're working on the vocals as we speak. So we're working our way through it, and I'm hoping, we've got a couple of shows in September, I think we're going to showcase a few of the new tracks. So yeah, it shouldn't be that long. Come in.
Well, best of luck, Rob, with all your plans, and we're certainly enjoying the music that you've created, not only with Magenta, but in all its different guises, really, since the mid-80s onwards, and lots to explore for people there.
Yeah.
So most, most of all, perhaps at the moment, best wishes for your appearance at the forthcoming Celebrate Prog event, which hopefully
everyone will come to.
Yes, and it will go from strength to strength in its own way, and this will be the first of many. That's the 7th and 8th of July. And we're going to play out with a track off Chameleon, and as you say, short, punchy, and highly accessible. This is Glitterball. My thanks to you from Get Ready to Rock, Rob Reed.